Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. We've got a great show for you today. We're going to talk a little about phosphorus. It is one of the most important nutrients for plants. We'd be happy to take your phone call as well here at 844-44-AG-PHD. It's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or send us a note on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. Well, we are live in the Morton studio today, and Darren, when I first start thinking about phosphorus, I just think about nutrient availability when the soil pH is not good. So what I'm getting at here is when we've got pH in the sixes, or even maybe in the upper fives, low sevens, our availability is much better than if we have pH in, let's say, eight, or pH that's five. So pH correction is a really big deal, and it allows you to put more phosphorus on, or I should say, whatever phosphorus you put on, have more of that be available.
That's for sure. pH correction is important. And when you think about what is soil pH, well, it's telling us there's some sort of imbalance out there, that we're way too high or we're way too low, and it's a terrible environment for microbes. I know we've talked recently here about mycorrhizae fungi. I believe yesterday we were talking about that a little bit again, and how these beneficial fungi that are in our soils and that we can actually apply in furrow in a number of crops to help boost those levels in our soils, they just don't function very well when our pH gets way out of whack. And I think about it like this, Brian, because we're right in the middle of winter, and there have been some pretty crazy cold days. And I always talk to guys that say, well, okay, are you working on your equipment? Oh, yeah. Most guys I talk to, yep, I'm working on equipment. And I say, oh, so you've got a heated shop. Well, yeah, of course I do. Yeah, we're in the north. You bet, I got a heated shop. All right, well, what if you didn't have the heated shop? How efficient would you be working on that equipment? Would you be able to put in an eight-hour day working on equipment outside? And guys just kind of laugh. Well, of course not. I couldn't. That's crazy. Yeah, well, it's just like those microbes in your soil. When your pH is 8 or 9, they're not going to function very well, or most of them aren't anyway. And the same thing when your pH is 5 or 4 or something like that. It needs to be around neutral, maybe slightly acidic, for most of those beneficial bacteria and fungi to really function well in the soil. And that's what's helping us get nutrients available. And then when we get just way overloaded soils that have, you know, way too much calcium or way too much magnesium or way too much aluminum, we start seeing a lot of tie-up of nutrients. And once we get those pHs back in line, all of a sudden we've got good availability and better yields.
Let's also talk about overdoing it on phosphorus. So we run into quite a few guys each year who have manure, and they put a lot of that manure on their fields. I should say, put a lot of the manure on their fields close to home. And so sometimes we see really, 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 really high levels of phosphorus in the soil. I'm talking about sometimes 200, 500, 1,000 parts per million. And our concern there is, what are we doing to the other nutrients in that field? So where I'm going with this is, if you're at even 200 parts per million in phosphorus, probably need to stop putting it on and draw that down a little bit, because you're going to most likely have issues with zinc and some other nutrients getting tied up, or just flat out there for whatever reason not available to your crop. That's not a good thing. And ultimately what we're after here is yield. So if you've got manure and you've already got your ground super loaded up, you got to look for another home for that. And or you've got to consider burying it down deeper, so you start changing some of your ratios down deeper in the soil. Because I'm going to guess, if you're spreading manure, most all that phosphorus is in the top 6 inches. If, let's just say, for example, you were to put a lot of your phosphorus in the 6 to 12 inch range, what would be the harm to that? Nothing. Okay, I mean, obviously, as long as you're not way overdoing it again, phosphorus isn't going to leach. You don't have to worry about it leaching. I mean, unless you get to crazy high levels. If you're at 500 or 1,000 parts per million, is it possible phosphorus could leach? Yes. But when you're at 50, no. You're not going to have phosphorus leaching. So the concern with phosphorus and why it causes problems out there, well, first of all, let me just say, phosphorus is the number one freshwater problem that we've got in terms of a nutrient. It's not nitrogen, it's phosphorus. If you have phosphorus that gets into your water, into fresh water, the odds are very high you're going to have algae blooms. The reason why is because the limiting factor, basically everything else is sitting there other than the phosphorus. And so algae is going to take off. That's a bad thing for water quality. So if phosphorus can't leach, how does it move? Well, how it moves is with soil. So number one, if you can bury the phosphorus, you're in much better shape. Keep your phosphorus levels low in the top couple inches of soil. Have the phosphorus levels higher as you go down deeper. Now you're in a good spot. Secondly, reduce erosion. You got to do everything you can to prevent erosion if you're near any body of water, any river, any lake, anything like that. Just be really careful what you're doing with the phosphorus. All right, so we are going to talk today about phosphorus, and again, we'd be happy to take your phone call. I also wanted to let you know we do have a number of upcoming workshops. We are getting down to the end of our workshops. Tomorrow, Darren's going to be in Thief River Falls, Minnesota. I'm going to be in Fargo, North Dakota. We'd love to have you at one of our events. It is called 101 Ways to Cut Farm Expenses Today. So we'll go through a bunch of different cuts you can make on your farm. We're going to talk about soil fertility. We're going to talk just a little about drainage. We're going to talk about new products, new chemistries. We're going to give you a little update on what's going on in terms of Enlist and herbicides, fungicides, insecticides, all that kind of thing. In addition to that, we are going to talk about our results from last year at our Ag PhD Field Day on the first steps plots. So in other words, where we had all these high-yield farmers, we're going to share yields, we're going to talk a little about profitability, talk about some of the things they did that we liked, and some of the things that got tried that didn't work. So we'll cover all that here the next couple of days. We also have another one of those 101 Ways to Cut Farm Expenses workshop next Monday, the 18th, right here at our Field Day site. On that same day, we've got a little special grain marketing session. We also have some dicamba training that day if you need dicamba training. I'm also going to be down in Brinkley, Arkansas here in a couple weeks. Got a few workshops coming up to wrap up our season. Love to have you at those. Check out agphd.com to learn more. Well, stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Ag PhD Radio.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an AgriSk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free GrainBridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at GrainPhD.com.
Give your corn a strong defense against stress throughout the season with MycoApply Endoprime SC. MycoApply Endoprime SC uses four specially selected species of mycorrhizal fungi to protect your crop against stress. That means more access to water and key micronutrients while building a healthy soil structure for stronger crops for years to come. Stronger corn starts beneath the surface. Learn more about MycoApply Endoprime SC at endoprimecorn.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
When you build with Morton Buildings, you build something that lasts. And now you can build for less during Building Value Days. If you're dreaming of a personal storage building, horse barn, farm storage, home, office, insulated workshop, or even a commercial facility, take advantage of our discounted pricing on new buildings now through February 28, 2019. So don't delay. Visit MortonBuildings.com for more information.
Using N-Serve nitrogen stabilizer with fall fertilizer applications keeps nitrogen available into the spring for maximum crop growth. Field trials in Iowa show N-Serve delivered an average revenue increase of $22.96 per acre, and N-Serve is the only recognized nitrogen stabilizer product in the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy because it reduces nitrate leaching. That's max profit in an environmentally sustainable way. Calculate your field's profit potential at nitrogenmaximizers.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Brian was just talking about upcoming workshops we've got, and I know on Monday morning we're going to have a special Grain PhD presentation ahead of our workshop here at Baltic, South Dakota at the Morton Center. So an hour before the workshop gets started, we're going to talk about what's going on in the markets, talk about some keys that we see with a marketing plan, and try and get you fired up going into 2019. And speaking of Grain PhD, you got Scott Harms with us today to chat a little bit. Scott, thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, Brian.
Okay, now when we talked last week, I was just ahead of the much-anticipated USDA report that lots of information, and since we missed out on things in January, everybody was excited about that, but it didn't really turn out the way that we were thinking that did. Can you talk about that a little bit and what you expect going forward?
Yeah, it was extremely disappointing, the price action on Friday and what seemed like a missed opportunity. All the grain markets have been mired in this tight range for months, and I certainly really thought that we were going to get some information to break us out of that range and set up some better opportunities for us. But you know, they did cut the corn and soybean yields as the headline numbers. They were lowered as expected, and there was a deeper cut to corn, which I thought was going to be the case. But what I didn't expect was a cut in feed usage on the corn side of 125 million bushels. And that pretty much just muted whatever cut we saw on the yield side. It just leveled it off. So feed usage is one of the areas of the supply and demand sheets that's really difficult to track. I mean, we get updates every week on exports and ethanol production, but on the feed usage side of it, it's largely a guess from quarter to quarter. So with the record hog numbers and the record cattle numbers, chicken numbers out there, it was certainly surprising to me that they would make that kind of a cut. But in the end, the numbers were largely a net neutral, and the market reacted as such. So that leaves us looking forward to the same things we were looking to ahead of the report, a potential government shutdown and the trade negotiations with China. It does appear that there's a budget deal out there that may avoid the shutdown on Friday, and that did lift prices a little bit today. And then going forward, you know, in my mind, I still believe at some time this winter that the corn market's going to need to buy back some acres from the soybeans. And without a large break to beans, I still look for a test of new crop corn values in the 420, 430 level.
Well, there you go. I'll take that, Scott. At least you got good news for us today. I got another question. It's kind of shifting gears just a little bit, though. We've been getting a lot of questions about crop insurance. And, you know, now that we're mid-February, we're nearing the halfway point of the price discovery period for spring insurance price. Talk to me about the GrainBridge software that you can get for free. Growers can get it for free through Grain PhD. How does that help in factoring in those insurance costs and coverages?
Well, actually, the crop insurance ties in really nicely with what GrainBridge offers in that platform. By using your specific crop insurance program for your farm, and it allows you to see your specific guarantee in bushels and then also in revenue, especially once the price guarantee is set later on this month. The system can provide a weighted average over your entire the build-out of your entire acres that you plug in, or you can plug it in on a farm-by-farm basis, a field-by-field basis, separately, if you've got separate programs for each one of them. And then the crop insurance guarantee, it's tied into the cash section of GrainBridge. So once you understand the guarantee bushels, it'll track and then all your marketing decisions, and you'll know it'll factor in, you know, what percentage sold you are against your crop insurance guarantee in bushels, then also in revenue. So, and then the overview is always tracked in the risk management report, also in the GrainBridge. So another nice feature, a really cool feature, though, is the what-if scenario matrix that you can use. And so you can run multiple scenarios, put different coverages in, see how it protects you against certain yield loss or price loss. And, you know, this is a really timely tool to get to, you know, working in your favor is the insurance deadline is fast approaching here in March.
Okay, let's talk about this now. From a marketing perspective, do you take the insurance coverages into account when you're developing your plan?
I would say that it's always out there. It's in the background. It's something that we may have to consider, and it may lead to an adjustment of a marketing plan somewhere down the road. But for the most part, when we work on an initial plan and trying to get something structured for a producer, we work on it with the understanding that it's not a factor. You know, for the most part, you know, the most popular crop insurance program is the revenue protection. So in order for that to come into play largely, you're going to have a pretty large yield decline or a pretty large drop in price, and neither of which are something that, you know, we're going to consider at this point in developing an overall plan. So we may have to deal with that later, but for now, we're going to put together a plan that's based on normal conditions, whatever those are. But I will give you a quick example of what we might do somewhere down the road, you know, in factoring in, an option play into, you know, the insurance equation. You know, we're at 7 trading sessions into the month right now, and right now it looks like we're about an average price around $4, just above there, for the December contract. So if you take 200 bushel APH and you have an 85% coverage, you're looking at a 680 bushel guarantee per acre. So at 200 bushel per acre, that gives you a price support level around 340, which a lot of people will call you have a free put option at 340. So what we may look to do is, on this price rally that we expect, buy a $4 put, you know, pay 15, 20 cents, whatever it is. And then if we get a price break, we'll use that price break. We may sell a 340 put against it. You're going to lose your hedge at 340 if the market goes down there, but you raise your overall price floor. And, you know, if the market goes below 340, and as long as your yield is going to be around 200, again, knowing we're going to have to make adjustments, you don't longer need that hedge because that insurance is going to protect you beyond that. So there's a lot of moving parts. You know, everything has to be monitored. Everything has to be adjusted. But it's just an example of what we might do, you know, if we were taking the insurance guarantee into play.
Well, I just think that's why you need something like Grainbridge Software. And we get so many questions about what's the best software out there for helping me manage my positions and, you know, making sales at different times and using some different vehicles to protect myself on the grains. That's why we use Grainbridge. We like it. It's free. It's easy to use. It's easy to get set up. I'd strongly recommend guys doing that. And, you know, Scott, you come on the show, you share a lot of information, but every farm operation we talk to, they're unique in how they're doing things and certainly how they're marketing grain. So we've got grainphd.com that you can go to with questions and so forth. But we've got a lot of our listeners that have figured out that you know a little more about grain marketing than I do. And they'd like, hey, can I just call Scott and not have to go through you guys and talk to you or on a radio question or something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that'd be great. You know, when we talk marketing, you know, here on the show, you know, we have to talk in generalities and, you know, have to be somewhat vague because every, you know, any real plan and any real action that somebody takes are tied to so many different things. And probably the most important of any plan, unique to any individual is having a strong understanding of the market and then a solid comfort level with, you know, what you're doing and who you're doing it with. So, you know, if you can call Grain PhD. You can do that at 844-GRAIN-01. The number is on the website. But if you call that number, they'll either direct you to me or someone else on the team and just have a casual conversation, talk about your operation and see, you know, what you're looking for and see if we can provide the answers or direct you to the answers, the information that you're looking for. But yeah, absolutely, feel free to give us a call.
Yeah, that number again is 844-GRAIN-01. Well, Scott, really appreciate having you on the show, and a little bit of good news maybe on the corn. Hopefully next time you're on, you'll have some more good news for us.
I think so. I think it's going to be a good couple of weeks ahead.
All right. Thanks a lot. And again, if you've got any questions, you can check out grainphd.com, find more information about that.
You know, Darren, like on the corn thing, I just, as we were talking, I pulled up the prices we sold grain for, because I was, you know, fairly happy with our corn on how we sold it for. And guess what? When the first day that we started selling our 2018 corn, October price, I can get the exact same price now for October of 2019. So that's not bad. And the first sale for January that we sold, I can get a penny more for January of 2020. So we're real similar to how we were a year ago. And those are, you know, fairly decent levels for that pricing year.
All right, we'll talk about one of the big inputs into our crop, phosphorus, on today's show. Stay tuned.
No secrets here. We all know, regardless of the markets, balanced crop nutrition pays. Agro-liquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Agro-liquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agroliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence, too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutec's EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutec's EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutec's EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy Two Save Three are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? The Soil Warrior can reduce trips across the field, optimize nutrient placement, and improve soil health. So you can lower production costs without losing yield. See what makes the Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
The Guardian Air Twin Spray Nozzle from HyPro produces a twin spray pattern with air-inducted droplets for superior coverage, even in dense canopies. Be effective and efficient with your spray application this season with the Guardian Air Twin. HyPro, helping you spray better.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. We're going to talk about phosphorus on our show. We get a lot of questions around N, P, and K, and nitrogen. We seem to talk about that one a lot. For some reason, I don't know, Brian, we've ended up focusing more on nitrogen and potassium on our show than many of the other nutrients. And we wanted to take a day where we just kind of focused on phosphorus a little bit, because there's a lot of information around phosphorus, and it's certainly a very important nutrient. Not just for corn and soybeans and wheat, but for a lot of other crops as well. So I thought we'd start off in Southern California. We've got Dylan Rogers with us with AgriLiquid. Dylan, thanks for joining us today. All right. Dylan, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Thanks for being on. We talk a lot about corn and soybeans and wheat on our show, and I would imagine being in Southern California, you probably have some other crops that you're working with.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of permanent crops, actually. Almonds, grapes, pistachios, citrus, and we think of phosphorus a little differently. We have to take different approaches in those crops.
All right, like for what are you doing then? Like for us, we're planting new every year. We're dropping stuff in furrow or in a 2x2. Seems pretty easy. What do you do with the permanent crop?
Right, so we're sort of limited as far as what we can do in the permanent crops, because we've got, you know, an established orchard or vineyard that we're dealing with, and we don't really have the option of getting that phosphorus fertilizer down into the soil via, you know, a shank or situations like that. So we're a lot of times limited to, you know, fertigation through emitters or drip tape, that type of thing. So really getting that phosphorus from the irrigation water down into the soil profile is a tough task, a needed task, but a tough one as well.
You know, we do talk about that quite a bit. We've got a lot of no-till in our area, and those guys are facing some of the same types of battles where we're seeing surface applications, or maybe we're getting it in the ground an inch or two. How do you get it to move down deeper, or are you just trying to influence the roots in that upper couple inches of soil more?
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with that root influence, and that's another thing that we deal with in the permanent crops too, is it seems like, you know, it's below the surface, it's out of sight, out of mind type of deal, where, say, in a corn crop, a farmer can go out, do a root dig, and actually see, you know, okay, here's a phosphorus fertilizer, see what it's doing to my new feeder roots versus a side that maybe doesn't have a phosphorus fertilizer. In that sense, we're also limited in the permanent crops, because a guy's not going to go out and dig up a tree that he's got a 25-year investment on, because it'll take him a while to get that tree back to where it was. So, you know, what goes on below the surface is tough for us to see. So, you know, we're kind of banking on research and the knowledge of how phosphorus moves and stuff like that. So, again, soil pH is very important to be able to move some of that phosphorus that's soluble in the water that's not getting tied up by the calcium or the magnesium, or in acidic situations by, you know, the aluminum, the iron, that type of thing.
Are you treating a lot of that water to be able to avoid some of those things?
Absolutely. A lot of these permanent crops will either have, you know, a sulfuric acid injection system to, because we deal with a lot of high pH water too, a lot of high bicarbonate water. So guys will either run a sulfuric acid to adjust that pH down to a slightly acidic, near neutral. Some guys use a phosphoric acid to do the same thing. So we're definitely treating the water to help prevent some of that tie-up as well.
How about with the micronutrients? Dylan, the one thing we see a lot of growers across the country talking about is zinc. When it comes to phosphorus, hey, if I overdo the phos, I got to make sure my zinc's up high enough, and I don't want to overdo the zinc. Otherwise, I kind of get out of balance with that phos. Do you have the same types of,
right,
of issues with permanent crops?
Yeah, so especially in almonds. And almonds, some of the rootstock here in California in the valley, a lot of the rootstock is inefficient at taking up zinc through the soil. So it seems like every spray that goes out in an orchard, there's some sort of zinc in the tank. So a lot of that zinc is going on foliarly.
Interesting. Yeah, it's fun talking to people that work with different crops, just to learn a little bit more about what's going on. And, you know, zinc is one that we're seeing corn growers, for example, putting on in multiple ways, whether it's in furrow, 2x2, foliar over the top, broadcast applications in the fall, those kinds of things, just trying to make sure,
right,
that we're not short on that important nutrient as well. Been talking,
yep,
with Dylan,
absolutely,
Rogers out in Southern California with AgriLiquid. Dylan, really fun having you on the show. We'll have to have you back again sometime.
Absolutely. Be happy to do it.
You bet. Thanks. Got Ty Fickenshire with us right now. He's down in Nebraska. Ty, you know, we're talking about phosphorus here, and you've got a lot of different soils in Nebraska and certainly a number of different crops that guys are raising. What's going on with phosphorus in your area? Are guys changing how they're doing things a little bit?
Yeah, we've taken, you know, the last couple of years, we've really been taking a look at how we apply phosphorus. You know, the historically we've worked to build the soil levels, and now there's more of a, you know, a look at how do we feed the crop versus necessarily build the soil levels. But, you know, we've seen a lot of the areas with high production, really, the levels have come down quite considerably in the last, you know, 10 or 15 years here. So looking at how we can address that and, you know, still raise the crop efficiently.
You know, we have a lot of livestock producers in the state of Nebraska, and you hear about manure and these types of things. And unfortunately, with dry manure, you end up with surface applications that you can only move in so far. What are you seeing with deeper tillage, strip tillage, other methods of moving that fertilizer a little bit deeper?
Yeah, there's obviously with manure application, a lot of guys will get taken disc that in, till that in some sort of method. We have, you know, a few of our customers, we've gone out and strip tilled after they've done a manure application. But when you look a year putting into manure and just trying to figure out how to manage that effectively going into the spring crop here.
Yeah, it's a challenge. I guess I'm a little selfish asking that question too, because we've got some manure that has to get applied yet this spring. So we'll be dealing with that one here in a couple of months. Hopefully the soil conditions are fit for that. But yeah, you know, we just don't see phosphorus moving much. What do you see in the lighter, sandier soils in Nebraska? Is there an issue with phosphorus moving too fast, or have you not seen much of that?
Not typically with phosphorus. We do have to watch our ground nitrate levels, which, you know, is kind of taking a bigger stage on a national level, so to speak. But, you know, our phosphorus, you know, especially in lighter soils, you know, guys will put on, you know, maybe not as high of a rate. They don't try to build the soil quite as much. So, yeah, there's on the lighter soil, I wouldn't say that's really the nutrient of concern, if you will, when we're making those applications.
Well, I know what kind of fall you had, and it wasn't that much different than ours, cold and wet for a lot of guys. What's the game plan going into spring for fertility?
Well, tell me what the weather's going to do.
It's going to be warm and dry, Ty. That's all we're talking about in Ag PhD. Warm and dry in the spring.
I like that message.
And it's going to be an early spring. You saw the groundhog, right? You said it's an early spring. We're taking any piece of positive news we can have.
Well, I'm sitting down in southwest Kansas right now. The sun's shining. It's kind of warm and kind of dry day. But yeah, that's the thing is, even the days we get some thawing weather up there around home, you know, it thaws out and we might have a dry couple inches maybe. But, you know, you get below that and it's just soft and wet. And, you know, trying to figure out how to manage that. You know, we have some guys that, you know, especially with strip till, we'll go out there and just run the coulter. We don't tend to have as many issues running just the coulter. On in wetter conditions as we do pull in the shank, but we have some applications where we still need to use that shank. So I'm trying to figure out just when we can approach that and get across the acres. I know from our standpoint, we're just basically as many hours as in a day, we'll just have to leverage every one of those as we can. So.
Yep, and it's certainly going to vary field by field. There's no question it's going to be a lot more work going into the spring. I've been talking with Ty Fickenscher. He's normally down in Nebraska, I guess down in sunny southwest Kansas today. Ty, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
You bet. Thank you.
You know, Brian, those spring conditions are going to be a big deal. There's no question about it this year, especially putting on nutrients like phosphorus.
Yeah, I agree. We're just really behind the eight ball when a lot of guys didn't get fall fertilizer on, so... A lot of talk about applying phosphorus in maybe a different way, maybe putting more on with the planter, maybe doing some strip till, those types of things. I know we are certainly going to look at that on our own farm. Well, stay tuned. We're going to talk more about phosphorus coming up right after this.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean field, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean field and get rewarded with Roundup Ready Plus when you choose the proven power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's Bellum herbicide.com.
1 year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/riseready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Are you frustrated with white mold showing up year after year in your soybeans? If you have tried fungicide applications and are still losing yield to white mold, now is the time to ask your seed dealer about Heads Up Plant Protectant. Heads Up is the first EPA-registered seed treatment for the prevention of white mold in soybeans and pulse crops. The first line of defense on your farm against white mold, now, starts with the right seed treatment package. Locate a Heads Up dealer near you by visiting headsupst.com today.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today, and our topic is phosphorus. We've been talking to people from the West Coast, now the Midwest, and want to get a perspective on the East Coast a little bit. We've got John. He farms in Maryland. Want to hear what's going on there. John, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you guys?
Good. All right. So when
we're
I say
really, we're really wet, as usual, we're very wet. More rain today.
I know it. It's just crazy. You guys have had just crazy weather, and we're talking phosphorus today. And I think about, you know, all the issues on the East Coast and with the Chesapeake Bay and beyond about what's happening with phosphorus and other nutrients. That's got to make it even trickier.
It does. There are some limitations on different soil types of how much phosphorus you can put on per acre around the Chesapeake Bay.
Okay, so how does it impact things? Are you able to use what you need to, or have you got to kind of find a workaround with cover crops and other things?
We actually allowed to, basically, we don't have a lot of manure. We have some cattle, but a lot of the phosphorus is pretty high in that Bay Area for chicken manure and turkey and cattle, but a lot of high phosphorus areas there. That's where you really run into a problem. Just putting your normal phosphorus on to the acre, really with dry fertilizer or liquids, not too much of a problem.
Were guys able to get much of the manure out there, or have you been limited too with all the moisture you've had just even getting in the fields?
We have, yeah. Well, technically, we're not supposed to spread manure from November 15th till March 15th, but they've made some exceptions this fall because it got fairly decent in December to let people spread manure. But it's very difficult to spread manure by the calendar anyway. But there's been a few times when they've had to change their regulations to let people spread it because that is a problem. Storage is a problem, definitely.
Now, are you guys still involved with blueberries?
Yes, we are.
How about fertility with the blueberries? We talked to a lot of the berry growers that they're doing things a little bit differently. Is phosphorus one of those nutrients you got to do a little different than you're doing with your other crops?
Not so much. I'm going to say no, because phosphorus is more dependent. I mean, the blueberries are more dependent on the nitrogen applications than they are phosphorus. Phosphorus is much more, you know, for germination and getting the plant started than it is, because our plants are pretty well mature plants. So no, not so much, no.
Hey, one other, a couple other blueberry questions. Copper. We had a grower on raising strawberries and raspberries, and they made a comment and they said, we don't have blueberries, but we hear those guys really have to worry about copper and some of the micros as well. Is that true?
Yes, definitely on all your berry crops, you need to be concerned about your micronutrients. Copper is pretty important to keep your levels up, and you don't be careful getting too high, though, you know what I mean? But the copper is very important. Yes, it is.
And pH, are you trying to keep that ground as acid as you can, or do you naturally have kind of an ideal pH for the blueberries?
In Maryland, we naturally have a low pH, but you have to be careful you don't put things on there to raise the pH. You want to keep it low. That's correct. We don't want to be putting too much low pH. You can use some organic materials like wood chips, sawdust, leaves. They will lower your pH as long as you don't hit it too extreme and shock it. But yeah, those kind of things you can lower your pH with if you need to.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a lot of guys end up using sulfur. Is that something that gets put out there as well, or do you have to be real careful with sulfur applications?
Yes. We use some ammonia sulfate, sometimes use some aluminum sulfate. Blueberries also require a little bit of aluminum, actually, believe it or not.
Interesting. Yeah, that is kind of fun because we think about aluminum and we think about issues with nutrients like phosphorus. I mean, there's just a fine balance when you're trying to feed crops ideally.
Oh, definitely. You don't want to overdo anything. You want to keep a good balance. You know, soil health, of course, very important, but you want to keep a good balance of all your micronutrients as well.
So what's happening on your farm right now, John, with all the moisture and everything else? Are you working on equipment, or have you got other things that you have to do?
Yeah, we typically, January is a month where we do a lot of equipment maintenance, change of oil, going over all the equipment. But we also have been pretty busy. The straw and the hay market on the East Coast has been very strong. In fact, the straw market has never been as strong as it is that I've seen. We've been selling big squares, 3x3x8, for $300 a ton, and there's a pretty strong demand for it. Straw.
Wow.
Very strong.
Yeah, that is interesting.
We have sold straw this winter higher price than I have ever gotten for it.
Huh. Well, I would assume the wet conditions have kind of played into that the supply may not be quite as good as what it's been.
Exactly. We had a wet summer, so a lot of straw wasn't baled in a timely manner, and then there's a lot of dairies in the area, and they bale corn stalks, and there wasn't very many corn stalks baled either for bedding. So they're short on corn stalks and straw, so it's been in high demand. And the construction industry is back for some straw, too. So
yeah,
they use quite a bit of straw for seeding.
Well, that is interesting. Yeah, it's fun being able to talk to growers around the country just to hear what some of those localized situations are. And I've been talking with John out in Maryland. It's been awfully wet out there. We're sure thinking about you guys and hope conditions improve. Thanks a lot, John. Really appreciate having you on.
All right, thank you. All right, thank you.
All right, Brian, getting some questions in here for the Ag PhD mailbag, including a phosphorus question I want to get to. So let's jump into the mailbag.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
Okay, this question is from Joe, and he said, I'm in a dry land situation. I have been 100% dry fertilizer broadcast, but I've got some phosphorus questions for you. I'm considering adding liquid fertilizer to my planter, specifically a 2x2 setup. And I grid sample all my acres on 2.5-acre grids. My ground that is going to corn this year is calling for an average of 100 pounds per acre of 1152O. Now, is that 52 phosphorus or is that 52 phosphate?
Phosphate.
Okay, so that's 52 pounds of phosphate, Joe. And then Joe said, by switching to the 2x2, I'm wondering, can I cut back on my rates without sacrificing yields? And if so, how much?
Now, he said 100 pounds. Is that 100 pounds of 1152?
100 pounds of 1152.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure it wasn't 100 pounds of phosphate he needs and apply 1152 to get that, which then, of course, would mean somewhere around 200 pounds. Okay, so anyway, sorry. What was your second question?
Well, can he cut back by going in a 2x2?
Well, you can cut back, but would I cut back? That's the big question. See, all we have for information, Darren, is, or at least I think this is all we have, is what he says the recommendation is. So I don't know what the actual yield goal is. I don't know how much organic matter he's got in his ground. I don't know how much phosphorus he's got in his ground right now that's available. I don't know how much phosphorus he's got in his ground that's tied
up. Okay, okay.
So I got a lot of questions
there.
Let's
just talk about this, because if the recommendation is calling for 52 pounds of phosphate per acre,
yep.
Well, the crop removal rate for 150 bushel corn, let's type that into the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app, is 52.5 pounds
of
phosphate.
Did he say that's what his yield goal was?
So for me, here's the thing, Joe. I don't know what your yield goal is, but let's just say it's 150. Well, then you need those 52 pounds or you're going backwards,
right?
Whether you put them in a 2x2 or however you do it.
Yep.
Now, let's just say you've got a bunch of phosphate out there already and you really don't need that. And you say, no, I want to go backwards a little bit. I want to burn up. I've got some high phosphate ground. Well, okay. Well, then,
that's,
yeah, by all
story.
Means, cut back.
Okay, so here's the whole thing with this banding versus broadcasting deal. The rate, the removal is the same. The crop is going to remove what it's going to remove. Anyway, the problem is when you broadcast, the roots can't find a lot of that phosphorus and more gets tied up. So it'll be there long term. It's going to be there 10, 20 years from now, some of that. But the point is, when you're banding, you can get better uptake this year. So usually what we tell guys is, at a minimum, you probably want to put on grain removal only in a band. But then on top of that, if you wanted to broadcast, or I should say instead of that, if you wanted to broadcast, we're usually suggesting 50% more. So that's what most studies have shown it takes.
We'll talk more about phosphorus coming up right after this. Stay tuned.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to growsmartrewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
In farming, there's a lot of variables out of our control. Don't let fertility be one of them. Let the experts at AgroLiquid move you closer to your bullseye. It's true. AgroLiquid fertilizers are formulated to keep nutrients available to your crop, and they have unmatched compatibility with other nutrients and crop protection products, which makes application more efficient than ever. But we also have the best people in the field, ready to talk about your operation, your goals. Go to agroliquid.com to move you closer to your target.
In order to be the best farmer you can be, you've got to have a grain marketing plan. But what do you do when you're too busy out in the fields trying to maximize yield? Hi, I'm Darren Hefty. My brother Brian and I are always busy learning more about how to make our farm more successful. That's why we use Grain PhD to learn more about grain marketing and to work with our Grain PhD risk expert to create a complete grain marketing strategy. Visit grainphd.com to learn more about a free consultation for your operation.
When you build with Morton Buildings, you build something that lasts. And now you can build for less during Building Value Days. If you're dreaming of a personal storage building, horse barn, farm storage, home, office, insulated workshop, or even a commercial facility, take advantage of our discounted pricing on new buildings now through February 28, 2019. So don't delay. Visit MortonBuildings.com for more information.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time, taking your calls and questions throughout the rest of the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. Or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty, or Darren Hefty. Brian, on Joe's question, we get that a lot about, can I cut back when I'm banding? And the big thing is you just have to look at what your crop's going to need. Like in this case, if you're raising 150 bushels or more of corn, you're going to remove 50 pounds or more of phosphate. So you don't want to cut back unless you want to go backwards on your soil test. So that's just the question. Do you want to go backwards? Maybe you need to go backwards. You say, I just can't afford it this year, but you're going to have to pay the piper at some point and put more of that out there. Got a question on Twitter that I wanted to get to, and this one came from Caleb. Caleb said, I'm raising conventional soybeans, and I've got giant ragweed, water hemp, lamb's quarters, and velvet leaf that I need to control. What would be your suggested program? Hey, Caleb, thanks for the question, and thanks for giving us such easy weeds to stop, too. Giant ragweed, resistant to Roundup, water hemp, resistant to Roundup, lamb's quarters, and velvet leaf. But hey, you can't use Roundup anyway, so you got all kinds of options here that we could be using in non-GMO beans. The big thing is going to be start with a good pre-program. That's where I would get after it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, here's the thing. There are a lot of people that are going to tell you, oh, you can't stop these weeds. That's a bunch of nonsense. You can stop every one of them. You can get 100% control if you want to. Now, let's talk about cultural practices. What I want you to do, if you want better weed control, is go to narrow rows, plant a higher population, and now you're going to shade out the ground better. That's obviously going to help. But anyway, whatever you do, start with three pre's. You've got to have a really good program there. Use Metribuzin, use a PPO, either Valor or Authority, and then use one of the yellows, Trifluralin or Prowl. So you do that, and you're in great shape to begin with. Then early post, I'm probably going to come with a combination of like Flexstar and Warrant, or maybe I'm going to use one of the Anthem products, and the point is I want a group 15 and I want a PPO. So I'm going to do that early post. And then after that, I'm going to see what I still have. So I still have options for all these weeds. So don't get too terribly concerned. It's just, we got to be on it right away. You cannot let these weeds get big. Otherwise you're in real trouble. But you start with three pre's, you follow up with two residual products early post. Now you got five things out there. You're already at 99%+ control. See what comes after that and go from there. Velvet leaf, by the way, the best thing is Resource or Cadet.
Yeah, Resource or Cadet, and it's not super expensive. With lamb's quarters, you've got the old Pinnacle or Harmony GT or Harmony
SG. That's where I come back to the Anthem products. When I have Cadet in there and I've got Zidua in there,
yeah,
I'm in pretty good shape.
Yeah, that's pretty nice. Pretty nice. Lots of choices there, Caleb.
All right. So. Did you want to get to this one, Darren?
Oh,
that you gave me?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So this one comes from Tom. Let's see. Where is he from, Darren?
Oregon.
Oregon. Okay. So anyway, he had many questions here. I'm going to get to as many as I can. He says, I'm currently farming in 100% furrow irrigated ground. For nitrogen, I use 10 gallons. Oh, Darren, I'm going to need you on this. It's going to take the rest of the show. See what you think on all these questions. Okay. He says he's using 10 gallons in 2x2 at planting. Then he's following with 40 gallons at side dress, like V6, V7 of high N. And what are your thoughts on that? Is there a better product, better timing? He says he didn't like the fact that after side dress, he didn't see a significant bump in levels of nitrogen. He, by the way, sent us tissue tests for all season, and he sent us soil tests. So thank you for giving us that
what's
information.
What's the yield goal?
Did he give us a yield goal? I don't know that I even saw a yield
goal.
It
might be on those recs, too, of what they're shooting for.
Yield goal 300.
Okay.
Here's the whole thing. If, let's say it was liquid 28%, for example, and you've got a grand total of 50 gallons, well, 50 times 3 is 150 pounds. So you're way, way, way short That's what I would say. You just don't have enough nitrogen.
Yeah, this figures out, I think, about 4 pounds. But still, if you got 50 total gallons times four, that's only 200. And at that point, we're still a little bit short. So.
Now, his thing was he has 5% organic matter. So he's hoping that, let's say, you get 20 pounds out of each percent. Maybe he's not getting that in part because he's got high pH soil here, 7.7 pH. Maybe that's what's causing that organic matter not to mineralize at the pace it should. So I'm going to guess he was hoping for more organic matter mineralization, and he's not getting it. So I just think, and here's the whole thing, Tom. It looks like you're trying to take things to the next level. You need to run some more experiments. So I'd try a variety of different things. But if it's me, I'm going to apply more nitrogen a little bit later. He's got 16 CEC. He can hold quite a bit of nitrogen.
Sure.
But you can't hold 300 pounds.
No, and I think that's kind of where he came at that 40 gallons was his max that he could put out of one shot, and so he's coming back with the max rate.
Maybe you need another shot.
I think you're going to need another shot, and you know, we hear from a lot of growers talking about doing it late season, and that may mean different things to different growers, but you may have to come up with some way to get some more out late season to make sure you've got some available when you need it the most.
Now, phosphorus, potassium, he said, his levels were good early on. He was putting 5 gallons of each in furrow.
And then they tailed off.
And then they tailed off. Tests. Right. Here again, it's just flat out not enough that you're putting on potentially.
Well, here's the thing. You know, you just want to put the fertilizer on in a number of different ways. So maybe you've got some that you're putting in furrow. Maybe you get some that you're putting in a 2x2. Maybe you get some that you're putting in a strip till band. Maybe you get some that you're putting on broadcast. And you've got a number of different ways that it's going to come available at different times for your plant to try to feed your plant all the way through the season. Because you're shooting for a really high yield goal, which is awesome. But to get there, you're going to have fertilizer available at the right times.
Yeah, and it's a little surprising because he has 785 parts per million of potassium. At those kind of levels, I would not expect the potassium to drop off as much as it did later in the season. I'm not going to tell you, though, that it's horrific, but it's not great where I see some of these levels at mid-season. So, yeah, try some things there. The problem with phosphorus and doing any side dress. Now, potassium, yes, you can get it into the ground if you're irrigating. But phosphorus, is that going to move into the ground? No way. That is not going to move into the ground. So if you're having phosphorus issues, then that's where I would maybe put more on early, somehow injected into the ground. If you have to go 2x2, if you have to inject somehow something, you have really high potassium levels in your soil test. You do not have really high phosphorus levels. Okay, let's see. He's got calcium here, magnesium, and he was worried about magnesium. Is it deficient all season? Or here's the whole thing. We get some high-yield farmers that say, I got to be at 0.3 on these tissue tests, and he's at 0.2 in a couple cases. Do we know that for sure?
Yeah, but we had 300 bushel corn last year on our own farm that we were at a 0.18
exactly.
Late season on magnesium.
Yep.
So would you like to be higher? I think so, but can you do it without it? I also think you can. I think you can get to 300. I don't think you can get to 400 probably at that, but I don't know. I've never raced 400 bushel corn, okay. But I think you may need a little bit more there, too.
His sulfur tailed off at the end of the season. He asked, can he side dress it? Absolutely. Sulfur moves in the soil.
Yeah, and you'll be putting that out when you're putting out that nitrogen late. And so a lot of those leachables, we see growers putting those out late. I know at the Ag PhD Field Day site, and a lot of our first step plots, we see a lot of the growers that are trying to get to the next level with yields there. Yeah, putting in those leachable nutrients in a later application. Like last year, for example, we had excessive rain and those late applications really paid.
Okay, so zinc, manganese, copper don't move much in the soil, especially the zinc and the copper. So he said his levels in zinc were up and down. I can see that. Your tests aren't very high. So the odds are your roots hit some
zinc,
and then
they
didn't.
We see that happen with rainfall in our area where we get moisture. Now, I don't know if this is all irrigated and what the frequency
of
irrigation
all irrigated.
Is.
He didn't say how often,
okay.
But it's all irrigated.
Yeah.
So anyway, so overall, Tom, we would just say you got a fairly decent plan together. Okay, it's not bad, but we absolutely think you need to try a little more nitrogen. You should try a little more phosphorus early in the season and try the little side dressing of potassium, maybe some boron and sulfur as well. Get a little more zinc out there up front too. So, number of things for you. Hopefully that helps.
Well, you know, here we go. We've got somebody that's shooting for 300 bushel corn, and you may be listening saying, I feel bad for him that he's having some challenges. Hey, I hope we can all learn from each other, and that's the fun thing about farming. You know, if you're raising that crop or you're raising other high-yield crops, I like rooting for those guys. Man, I hope he gets there, and then we'll figure out what he did and try to emulate that on our farm as well. That's some fun questions on today's show. I want to say thanks to everybody who sent in questions and encourage you. If you've got an agronomic question, our email address is radio@agphd.com. Thanks for listening today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now, stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.